welcome to the 32nd episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. In this episode, we're going to interview core app developer Niklas. We've also got another time-saving tip and we'll read your feedback. If you're listening or watching live, hi! You can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Laura, and joining me are Mark.
Hello.
Alan.
Hello.
And Tony.
Hi there.
So, Mark, what have you been up to?
I have been writing and releasing an app indicator, which is one of those little icon slash menu thingies that sits up by your clock.
In what isn't called the system tray?
It's the indicator
what does
area.
It indicate?
It indicates, we've talked a bit before about BitTorrent Sync, which is a tool for synchronising folders peer-to-peer between your machines. Which is available for Windows, Mac and Linux, but on Linux you only get a web interface, whereas on everything else you get a little icon and a GUI. Mm-hmm. So I thought it would be nice if I could write an indicator so I could see when it was syncing, so I didn't keep turning my computer off before it finished. So, I wrote it in Python, did the initial version in an afternoon and then have done various iterations of it. But there's a guy who's packaging BitTorrent Sync for Ubuntu, and I sent him an email saying, I've just written this. Do you want to include it? And he's now including it in his Debian package. So you can get a PPA with the BitTorrent Sync, your BTSync-user package, which installs my indicator, which is quite nice.
That's like being nice. Famous.
It is. It is like being famous. Yeah.
I want to touch you.
Your email address will be in some license file.
I imagine so. Well, in fact, yeah, because I have my project on GitHub and he has his project and he just basically pulls my GitHub stuff into his when he does a build, which is quite clever. So he doesn't have to maintain a separate fork.
Nice. Mm. Alan.
Sweet. Hello.
What have you been doing?
I started a code club.
Ooh. Cool.
At a school near me. They got in touch with me a few months ago. You know when we interviewed Linda Sandrick about code club?
Yeah.
Few months ago, and I said to her, oh, I will start one of those, and I signed up on the website, and then a local school got in contact and said, hey, do you want to do a code club at our school? And I kind of said yes. So I started yesterday, and there were 35 children signed up for the code club.
Wow.
But the teacher at the school decided to limit it to only 10. There's actually plenty of room in their ICT suite for probably about 20, maybe more.
I want to check that you weren't rubbish.
Whether you can cope with like 10 children between the age of 9 and 11. Mm-hmm. But we started off yesterday making a little game in Scratch.
Cool.
With a couple of characters that chase each other around the room. And it was really good because there's a certain set of instructions that say, you know, use a cat and a mouse, and you resize the mouse down, and they're on a particular background. And very quickly, the kids were customizing it to their own needs. They named the animals their own names. They painted the animals and colored them in. They changed the background. One of them was in a disco, another one was in a bedroom.
Wow.
But yeah, they all came out with the same kind of game, but customized in a little way. And that was, for all of them, their very first experience of Scratch. They'd never used it before, and they wrote a game by the end of it.
Fantastic.
It was good fun.
Do they have to call you sir?
No.
Mr. Pope.
Good morning, Mr. Pope.
No. Popey.
Al.
Alan.
Right.
Elvis.
Whatever. Big Al.
Yeah, it was good fun. And I'm going back there again next week. So.
Cool.
Excellent. Well done.
Tony, what have you been up to?
I replaced the hard disk drive in my netbook with a solid state one. Which was a
feat. You know how to party.
Took him a whole day.
What took a whole day was copying everything off the old one and then copying onto the new one via a USB dongle widget interface thing. But it was an Acer One, so you have to dismantle the whole thing and take the whole motherboard out and take it down to components to do so.
You basically have to smash it to bits, don't you?
Yes.
Which is the second time I've done it because I upgraded the RAM in it a few years ago. But it's surprisingly worthwhile. I mean, it's not like the fastest thing in the world ever. And I wasn't expecting it to be, but it is nippier as a result. So Alan was just thinking about smashing his laptop into a small flying insect.
And the only thing that stopped me is the fact that the sound card and video camera are plugged into my laptop. It's the only thing that stopped me.
It's touching. You want to protect Mark from its fearsome fangs.
Anyhow.
Laura, what about you?
I got my first Unbound book from Kickstarter thing, but for books.
Is this the...
So
Bletchley Park book.
No, that's not finished yet, I don't think, but Robert Llewellyn did sequel to his original Unbound book, which was News from Gardenia, and that which I read, but I didn't contribute to. But yeah, I contributed to News from the Squares, which is a sequel.
And does it come as a like proper book?
Well, I got the digital one.
Ah, okay.
If you pay tenner, you get the Kindle version or digital version.
What do you have to pay for a physical one?
20, I think.
Okay.
But my name's in the back. Ooh, actually, I haven't checked, but it's supposed to be in the back.
Tiny, tiny, tiny.
Yeah.
Well, a digital one, you can have as many names as you like, presumably.
Yeah, a 20K file and then a 100 meg attachment with all the names in it.
Yeah.
Well, both that one and the Bletchley Park one, which are the two that I've pledged for, have gone beyond 100%.
Cool.
Funding, so.
Awesome. Excellent. Cool. So, should we get on with the interview?
Yes.
Yes. Let's do that. So on the line we have Neklesh, who's been working with us at Canonical on the Core Apps project. How are you doing, Neklesh?
I'm doing great, Alan. Thanks for asking.
Cool. So how did you get started in this whole Core Apps thing?
Well, Canonical came up with a call for community help to build their Core Apps. And I had a look at the Core Apps that were shown, for instance, the Clock app, the calendar, and all the others. And I started off looking for apps which suited my interest, and also at the same time they had some developers working on it already. My primary goal was to sort of just help with small patches, bug triaging, and small related tasks. And I saw the Clock app, which I found interesting, and at the same time it also had two developers working on it. So I thought, okay, why not just join them and then try bringing a small difference to the Clock app.
And so how did you discover this project was going on? Is it just like reading blog articles and stuff and you stumbled across this, or had you been around the community before? Or
yeah, I've been around the community before. In the sense, like, I read a lot of blogs, like OMG Ubuntu. I keep tabs on Google Plus as well. And that's how I came to know about, I saw the announcement about Ubuntu Touch on Ubuntu's website. It was a huge deal. naturally, I came through the announcement for the calling for the Core Apps as well.
And so,
And
what experience did you have already in QML? Because it's all written in QML, right?
Yeah, it's QML and JavaScript. And at the beginning, I had none, like literally none. I haven't used Qt or QML before.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite, that's the thing. That's the reason why I targeted applications which had developers working on them already. So I wanted to basically learn from their code merges and basically learn as I go.
Wow. And so that was back in something like May, wasn't it, earlier this year?
Yeah, April-ish, I think, towards the end of April, I guess. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So the project was running along and the Clock started being developed. How did the development get coordinated? How did you know what the Clock should look like and what the design should be and so on?
Well, there was some preliminary wireframe designs in the Ubuntu wiki for the Core Apps. And I had a look at a lot of designs for all the Core Apps, like Calendar, Clock, and everything. So from the Clock wireframes, I had an idea of where the Clock app is sort of going towards. And if you look at the code, when I started compiling them, I noticed that they were also trying to implement these wireframes. So I thought I just start by helping them implement the wireframes and finish them.
Right.
But the thing is, once we started implementing the wireframes, we had a lot of questions for the designers and stuff like that. The thing is, there were two developers and myself, and we were not really organized at that point. So I wanted to set up some meetings on the mailing list or somewhere on IRC, perhaps, so that we can sort of discuss together how to implement and who is going to implement what. So this way, you know, we don't duplicate the stuff, and it would be much better if we were organized.
And so the other developers are, I guess, physically remote from you. You're all working online like any other open source project.
Yeah, yeah. quite far away, yeah.
and so you had regular meetings with each other and regular meetings with the Canonical design team, right? And that helped the project move forward?
Yeah, quite a lot, actually, yeah. I mean, it's like when we started working together, we knew what each person had to do. So we sort of assigned tasks and said, okay, this has to be done and stuff like that. And any questions that we had for design, we sort of like put together in a list. And then when we had weekly design meetings with the designers from Canonical. And at those meetings, we had our question answered.
And you did all the development in Qt Creator, the Ubuntu SDK.
Yeah, that's right.
How did you find that? Was any obstacles in using the SDK, any problems with that?
No, actually, I found Qt Creator to be brilliant because, the IDE was actually, the interface was quite user-friendly. And the thing is, at that time, I was running 12.04, so there were some issues with Qt 4 and Qt 5 transition period. But the moment I upgraded to 12.10 or 13.04, things went on quite smooth, actually.
So after a while, the team kind of changed a little bit. Tell us how the team changed and you kind of became the focal point, as it were.
Sure. The thing is, we started off with including me, three developers, and then we saw new people coming in, and I think at the peak of our contributors, we had about I think six contributors.
Wow.
And it was really cool.
You wouldn't think a clock needs that many people, do you?
I'm sorry?
You wouldn't think a clock needs that many people.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, you know, the clock app is actually quite huge. I mean, we've got the clock, the alarm, timer, stopwatch, and each of them are quite different from each other. So, yeah, well, six, yes, does seem to be high, but I mean, it went on well. We were able to organize ourselves quite well with regards to that. And I think some months later, the contributors started dropping off, and the original two developers who started this, they got quite busy with their daily life. So it sort of became reduced to almost like just two contributors. So it was just me and another person, actually. And then we were the ones who attended the design meetings regularly. And then it's like, at the time where we were reduced to contributors, things were getting quite complicated. In the sense, like, we started getting new visual designs, and then the functionality started changing, so which meant that we needed some code right here and there, but we didn't have enough people to write it. So it was, I think that period of time where we had two developers was actually quite difficult for us.
So what's the reward for you for doing this work?
What do I get off it? I think, I always had an interest for programming, and the thing is, like, when I also wanted to contribute back to Ubuntu for quite a long time, but the thing is, I could never get into existing projects like Unity or anything like that, because the projects themselves were quite huge, and it wasn't easy to basically understand the entire code base to contribute something.
Was you, sorry, I'll start that again. Was you? My appalling grammar. Did you have a background in development before? Were you an experienced developer, would you say?
I wouldn't say experience, I would say intermediate sort of style, because, I mean, I used to try to create my own apps in Python, C++. So, yeah, in a way you could say I was a developer before.
So how did you find using QML to develop Ubuntu apps? What was different about that than your previous experience with Python and C++?
I would say the code syntax is quite different. The thing is, QML is sort of declarative, which is quite different from Python and C++.
Yeah.
And it sort of took quite some time to get used to that sort of code logic, you know? I mean, the thing is, like, I found myself doing some stuff in QML through the long way, and then some experienced QML contributor comes along and says, you know, you could do it in a shorter way by using QML's features.
Yeah,
and then I learn about that, and I make sure that I don't do the same mistake again in the future.
So, would you like to see an opportunity to work on these apps full time as kind of a game? I'm not offering anything, but as a sort of, you know, a permanent employment.
No, not really. I mean, the thing is, like...
Fair enough, I won't bother then.
it's more a bit of fun, like, spare time? I know it's eaten a lot of your spare time, Niklas.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's entirely the full of my spare time. I mean, all the other hobbies I had, I had to put it on hold pretty much.
Wow.
But I mean, it's worth it. I love what I'm doing right now for Ubuntu, so yeah.
Okay. Couldn't even offer you a job if we had one to hand.
Well, I think that's one of the nice things about the Core Apps project, is it's brought people in who weren't previously, as Niklas has said, developers, who can contribute to something meaningful that's going to be in people's hands, and is fun.
And the fact that you are starting from the ground up gives everybody an equal playing field and an opportunity to get involved really from day one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is, like, over the past few months, we have organized hackathons, for instance,
mm-hmm.
where a new contributors come in and try to produce some bug fixes, for mm-hmm. instance. And we've had quite a lot of bug fixes coming in, and it sort of shows the early stages that the project is still in. And you can come in at any time, take a look at the code base, and grasp it quite quickly.
Yeah, I was quite surprised that those hack days actually worked, that we'd get drive-by contributions, just drive-by fixes, people like spotting a bug, grabbing hold of it, fixing it, committing their change, and then, you know, within a day or so, it's on the phone, in the build, ready for people to use. It's quite amazing how that actually worked.
Yeah, I think it's also partially to do with QML. I think it's quite easy to edit something, modify something, and then immediately test it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another interesting point, actually. You went through this whole development process without actually having a phone to test this on. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. So how did you do your testing? Or did you not bother?
Hello? Put yourself, for instance, who could test on the phone and then immediately let me know if it's good or not. And, yeah.
So you initially test on the desktop and then someone else tests on the phone, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, like, most of the time, at least initially, I did it all on my desktop. And the QML interface is very flexible, so I was kind of pretty sure that if it works on the desktop, it should sort of work on the phone, maybe with small variations, probably a little bit of anchoring here and there, which might be incorrect.
Mm-hmm. Do you find it hard to get a feel for how touch gestures would work if you're testing on the desktop?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, in the sense, like, when you start playing around with the tolerances for certain UI gestures, for instance, right. You'd like to test it on the phone. To see if it actually is smooth and everything.
So now that the clock is pretty much done, there's a few bits left to do, but it's pretty much done. You've been taking some of that spare time to look at the App Developer Showdown. What's been your role in the Developer Showdown?
Well, I'm actually one of the judges for the App Developer Showdown. And so I was basically invited to review all the apps that come in, and then review them in terms of design, in terms of their usability, and other factors. So that's what I'm been doing now. But like over the course of the App Developer Showdown, I've been interacting with the developers themselves by providing them with bug reports or anything. The thing is, like, I would say most of the app developers who came for the showdown did not have a phone. And some of the features that they were implemented needed to be tested on the phone. So I sort of helped them with that. So testing if the UI looks perfect on the phone, and if certain features, like, for instance, opening a URL in the browser, for instance, works. And I think overall it was amazing to see the work done by these developers. I mean, they achieved so much within a short period of time.
Cool. I don't know if you're at liberty to say this at the moment, but what do you think is the coolest app that you've seen out of the showdown?
Oh, that's not fair.
I mean, you'll see that for yourself next week.
Okay.
So, yeah, the results are next week.
Okay, I'll be patient.
So how many were how many apps were submitted to the showdown?
I think around 30 to 35 apps.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And each of them quite distinct from each other and feature filled, I would say.
Right, so it's not like we've got 10 torch apps or
10 John O'Bacon soundboards.
No. I mean, each of them perform a specific function, which I think the thing is, like, many of the apps that were developed, actually, you need them for your daily usage, and you'll start off get to realize this once you know, it's on the phone. Yeah, definitely. Hmm.
So was there was it just sort of spontaneous that people came up with their own ideas, or was there some sort of process for putting out, you know, people to say, oh, I'll do this, and then someone else doesn't do that, or has it just worked out that the, you know, people have worked on their own things?
Oh, we had a Reddit page for the showdown, so people there could submit the ideas and see if they worked. So this way, I guess it helped one DAO for not doing the same thing as another.
Cool.
Yeah, that's worked out surprisingly well, that I now have a phone. I've installed every single one of the apps on my phone, and it's given me quite a diverse range. I mean, some of the apps that I, you know, probably won't use, maybe because they're location specific or something, but there's a surprisingly diverse range of apps, and I'm quite looking forward to seeing, once the phone release, what other things people come up with that, you know, aren't bound by this competition.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you have to understand, these developers have been making their apps while the SDK was in its beta, so I mean, the thing is, new features are being added to the SDK quite progressively every day. So it's amazing to, and it's also, I'm curious to see what kind of apps are going to come out in the future.
Yeah, me too.
I'm really excited for this.
Great. Well, thank you so much for spending some time to talk to us, Niklas. I really appreciate you taking some of your spare time to talk to us. And yes, good luck, and look forward to seeing the competition results next week.
Yeah. Definitely. And thanks for inviting me to this podcast.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
And now, for those of you who like the command line, it's time for some command line love.
Wow. Was that a shiver of disgust or delight?
Best not to ask. And this week's command I love is dstat, which is...
Is that like datstat? This is dstat and that's datstat.
God. Wow.
It's, no. Okay. No. No, dstat... For goodness sake. Dstat is a versatile replacement for vmstat, iostat, netstat, and ifstat.
Blimey.
Yeah.
An all-in-one.
It's pretty good. I first saw this at FOSDEM probably about 5 years ago, and it's still being actively developed and still very useful. And basically, it's got a bunch of monitors that can monitor various aspects of your PC and its kind of operation. So that might be disk usage or CPU usage or memory or input-output stuff or paging or swap or load or whatever it might be, and to show you that information over a period of time. A bit like Top, but with a bit more kind of configuration and a wider range of things it can monitor.
Cool.
It's really pretty cool. And it's Python, so it's easily extensible. You can add your own monitors very easily if you know Python, of course, which some of us don't. But, you know. It's definitely worth checking out if you want to monitor the status of a remote server or something like that. Yeah, I can recommend it.
Cool.
I'll actually show the people watching in the... video. Uh-huh. I'm actually showing them what it's looking like right now on my laptop.
On your laptop?
Yes. It's lots of stats scrolling up the screen. It looks very much like VMstat.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a development of that.
Ah, okay. Very so it's colorful. Got like CPU stuff, I/O, amount of paging, system RAM in use, that kind of stuff.
But those are the default options. So the whole point is you can expand it and extend it and remove other ones and sort them things in out. So monitor just what you want to monitor.
That's pretty sweet.
It is very nice. Yeah. So we'll put a link to the site for that in the show notes. And go and check it out.
Awesome.
Fantastic. It's that time again where we're going to go over your feedback. And first up from the big mailbag is Carl, who emailed us about our security and privacy discussion.
I just moved to Berlin, and the local ISP shipped their wireless modem or router with a unique 16-digit wireless password stuck on the bottom. If every address with an IP address was secured from the factory like this, we'd be 99% better than we are today. By the way, the Iranian uranium... Cool, that's hard to say. Centrifuges, try saying that quickly, he says, were not connected to the internet, according to this source, and he cites a Wired article.
Yeah, that was my bad.
Yes.
I like discussions on security, especially by non-tin hats like yourself. Mainly because I know so little about it. Well, you're in good company, because neither do we.
as you can probably tell.
Yes, it has been proven time and time again.
It's an interesting point that he makes about the default passwords on these routers and things. By sticking it to the underside, shipping it, nobody can guess what it is. It's randomly generated. You can change it to something probably less secure yourself if you really feel the need, but most people are just going to enter it hopefully once on each device and then forget about it.
So my phone, you know, I carry everywhere and I take photos of
your stuff. Ubuntu phone.
Yes.
Okay.
When I go to people's houses, like relatives, if I need to use their internet, I'll just walk over to their router and take a photo of the bottom of their router, because it's just easier than asking them for the password. I'll say, "Can I use your internet?" They go, "No, oh, yeah, I've got the password somewhere." Like, "Don't worry, I'll get it," and that's worked on 100% of the visits that I've done to families.
Cool.
Yeah, BT routers actually come with a little removable bit of plastic which have the label on, so that when someone says, "Oh, what's your password?" you can just go, "There you go."
Except in this house, where you and your crazy keys
put your thing on a QR code for us to take a photo.
That doesn't work with iOS.
It doesn't work with the Ubuntu phone either. Someone should write an app, actually, that reads just your QR code and turns it into a Wi-Fi access. Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for emailing in, Carl. Anyway, it's useful.
Yeah. Flame Kebab tweeted,
"I hope you're going to talk about SteamOS tonight. Exciting stuff."
Wow, a bit late to the party there,
Yeah, we
Flame
talked
Kebab.
About that last week.
You did. but thanks for getting in touch.
Yeah, thanks, Flame Kebab. Yeah. Also, Borgu says,
"Your last show was a bit boring."
Unhappy smiley
face. I imagine that's the one before
the last,
the one
show,
which was just us two, because the one that we did was absolute gold.
Yeah,
but maybe it was the missing one, which was quite boring.
Yes,
I heard it was really good. I heard that people were raving about that episode, and there are lots of people out there.
It's the talk of the town. Yeah, everybody wants to download it.
Yeah,
it's the mythical lost episode.
No,
the
it's Ubuntu not lost. Podcast.
It's, and we know exactly where it is.
We just can't.
On my desk, on a disk that's currently inaccessible with no interface.
It's a bit like the Doomsday Project.
It is very much like the Doomsday Project. Yes, lots of effort went into making that, and it's now archived in a format nobody can read. Yes.
That's it. Well, thanks for taking the time to tweet us about Borgu, and hopefully this one's more interesting. I don't know. It's been quite interesting here. I mean, all the insects and things.
My laptop getting batted off the side of the sofa by a cat.
Yes. Indirectly. Yes. Excellent.
So, at Third Wiki, or Lenny Metzger, tweeted,
"Why aren't the latest Nexus 7 2013 included in the Ubuntu Touch compatibility list? And what can I do to change this as a non-coder?"
What an excellent question, and a question that I get every single day since the Nexus 7 2013 came out.
Is this a problem with, other than, you know, people having time to port it to the Nexus 7 when they're concentrating on phones, is there going to be a big problem here around the graphics driver?
So I don't know what the specific difference is between the Nexus 7 2012 and the Nexus 7 2013 in terms of internals, because I've never seen the new one. But the key thing is that there are four devices that we said we would support: the Galaxy Nexus, the Nexus 4, 7, and 10. Okay, the 2012 Nexus 7.
Yeah,
and we committed resources to keeping those working, and we said to everyone else, we'll write a porting guide, and you guys in the community, if you want to port Ubuntu Touch to any other device, whatever it is, whether it's a Nexus device or not, go right ahead. We'll help you where we possibly can, but we're focused on these four devices.
Right.
The fact that Google have revved the Nexus 7 and made a newer one with a higher res display and new internals or whatever that thing has, doesn't take away from the fact that we have a company full of 2012 Nexus 7s.
Yeah.
And, you know, it makes no sense for us to drop that and start on another one while we're still getting it working on the existing one.
Yeah. So, Is there something that Lenny can do to get hold of someone who might be interested in porting it to the new one?
Well, ideally, you need to have CyanogenMod working on it first.
Right.
If CyanogenMod is ported and works on it, that's a good step in the right direction. Once CyanogenMod is working on there, then that gives us the driver support, and you need the kernel sources to be able to build everything you know, for Ubuntu Touch as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, find someone who has the device, find someone who is willing to port CyanogenMod, or if it's already been ported, do the work to port Ubuntu to it. Because, frankly, we're not going to do it because we just don't have enough capacity to pick up every single device, even if it's just a rev of an existing device.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
That's why.
Well, Tony from the SMLR podcast got in touch and wanted to tell us a bit about his show.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review is a weekly podcast with three hosts, Tony Bemis, Matt Enders, and Mary Tomich. They talk about Linux and open source subjects ranging from kernel updates, newly released Linux distros, Linux reviews, and tech news of the week. There are also special segments including Mary's Quiz Show, Is It Alive? They broadcast live on Google On Air, Audio Stream, and chat on IRC. For details, please visit the website www.smlr.us.
So I've watched them now and then when I'm cooking Sunday lunch, because it's Sunday morning for them in the US, and it's like Sunday lunchtime afternoon for us in the UK. So
cool.
I sometimes have that on in the kitchen, listening to them chatting away. And they do a similar thing to what we've done this week, which is have a webcam in the corner, point at them, sat around a table, and they discuss stuff together. About, you know, Linux in general, news and stuff like that.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, check it out.
Give
if
it
you
a listen.
I want something to do while you're cooking your Sunday lunch.
Yes.
And finally, Simon Josie emailed us to say,
a couple of weeks ago, you recorded two shows back to back, and at one point, you almost got confused about the date. This reminded me of one of my favourite comedy skits. It's the pre-taped call-in show with Ken Dorrell, and you can find it on YouTube. We'll put a link in the show notes, and it's very funny.
It is. Hilarious.
It is very good.
And yes, we did get a little confused, and I even did again today.
Yes.
So, yes, that's worth watching. But yeah, I think you can just search on YouTube for pre-taped show.
Pre-taped call-in show. Yeah.
Yes, that's yes. The one.
Just before we finish this segment, I just had a quick look on the CyanogenMod website, and it appears that the new Nexus 7 does have CyanogenMod working on it.
Excellent. So halfway there.
Yeah.
And that's the end of your feedback.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that enthralls, exasperates, or elevates you, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. Please, do get in touch. I mean it. Just one message. Just to know there's someone out there who cares.
And that's all for this episode. Join us on Wednesday the 9th of October at 19:30 UTC for our next live episode. That's 8:30 in the evening for those in the UK.
We're coming up to the end of October soon, aren't we, when the yes. clocks yeah. muck about.
Halloween.
Yes. And then they go back. And then we won't have to explain quite as many time zones.
Good.
Excellent.
One less than two.
See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.